The Brendan O'Connor Show on RTE Radio 1 with All Care Pharmacy. Care and protection for the whole family's health at All Care, taking care of communities across Ireland.
We've been talking about family dynamics and Harry and William and all these kind of tricky relationship stuff today. So we're going to stick with it now, but let's talk about our primary relationships for those who have them with our other halves. And when relationship expert therapist, relationship therapist Dr. Colm O'Connor was on with us some time ago there, we got a huge response. So Colm is back with us today to give a little bit more of his insight into what is happening between couples, you know, during this kind of unique time. Colm, COVID has kind of put a lot of pressure on relationships, as we were saying before. You were making the point that never have we expected so much from one person, our partner.
Yes, absolutely. I think in the current century, I think what we expect from our partners, whether in a heterosexual relationship or a same-sex relationship, is we expect our partners to be our confidants, our sexual partners, our business partners, our co-parent, our soulmate, our friend. And I think never before in the history of humanity has so much been placed on the shoulders of intimate relationships to provide us with our basic needs being met. And if you go back to...
And then if everyone's locked down in the house as well, you're kind of expecting them to provide your whole social life as well. It's another layer, isn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, and again, so then most couples then are struggling because of this. And it's important just to remember that there's so much placed on the shoulders of the relationship that eventually things would have to crack a little bit. If you went back to previous centuries or the return of the previous centuries, relationships, really the function of relationships would have been around productivity and business and procreation, etc. And romance as an entity or an important entity in relationships is a relatively recent development in the history of humanity. And when people back in ancient times married until death did they part, a relationship might not have lasted more than 10, 12 years, you know?
Of course.
So like you look at Prince Philip and Queen Elizabeth lasting for so many years, that in the history of humanity, that's not usual.
Yeah.
But it's extraordinary that people can survive with that, you know?
Yeah. So when people signed up for a life sentence in those days, it was a much shorter life sentence. And listen then,
Absolutely.
So you've all that at play. And then I suppose in the last year as well, there's been all these extra other stresses coming from outside, putting more strain on it.
Absolutely. And the COVID, really what it does is it gets at our basic needs. And we have basic needs for freedom, which is compromised by COVID. We've a basic need for certainty, which is compromised by COVID. We've a basic need for connection, which is compromised by COVID. And we've a basic need for separateness, which is compromised by COVID. So the effect of it on our core needs is huge, and people kind of have documented that. But we are relational people. So I find in my work, when people come in to see me, people generally aren't talking about COVID, or the narrative of people's lives in their kitchens and living rooms in Ireland aren't usually what you hear on the 6-1 news. They're much more about the rupture in relationships, dealing with rejection, dealing with hurt, dealing with alienation. And as people who are invested in relationships, the currency in which we feel pain is around issues like rejection, hurt, alienation, yeah, not being understood, etc., you know?
Okay, and we'll come to them in a second. But can I just ask you first, so would you say, because, you know, I think the question a lot of people have is, when do I know that I'm in trouble here? Or when do I know that I need to go and see someone like you? Should we just accept that at the moment, with it, the extreme way that life is in ways, that it's natural that things might be a bit tense and that there might be a bit more conflict than usual, but not overly worry about it?
Absolutely. I mean, again, if I was speaking to people, I'd say if you're feeling under pressure, it's normal. And if you're feeling under pressure and your relationship isn't working as well as it used to be, it's not your fault. You're not doing anything wrong. There are normal consequences of the effect of external stress on relationships, which can affect essentially your own mental status and your mental health. So it's normal to feel a little bit more down, a little bit more fatigued, a little bit more anxious, a little bit more stressed. So that actually is a healthy response. Having said that, like seeing people like me can actually be an extreme relief for people. So to be in an environment where they can talk about the effects of these kinds of things and get them out in the open and begin to realise that they're normal and begin to realise that they're different ways of dealing with things are normal and healthy can be a huge relief for people. And what people find in counselling and in couples therapy is they can begin to have the conversation that they're unable to have on a daily basis or under the stress that they're going through. You know?
Yeah.
And I use the analogy the last time. Sorry, go ahead.
No, you go on.
Yeah, no, I use the analogy the last time I spoke to you was that relationships sometimes then run aground. And when they run aground, it's like a ship running on the rocks. And at that point, very often relationships aren't going very far. And rather than talking about what's wrong or talking about who's to blame for the ship running on the rock, running up on the rocks, what's important is to kind of sometimes to get off the ship and begin to talk about the future and talk about what people want and need. So when I see people, I don't get them to talk about their problems because that's what people expect, or when they're coming in, they think, oh God, this is going to be terrible, or we're going to be talking about all the negativity.
Yeah.
Instead, it's far better and more enlivening to be able to talk about what people want and hope for and begin to articulate a vision and a direction and a hope. And when people can begin to do that, they begin to rediscover their desire and their wanting and can reconnect and learn how to communicate again.
Okay, so rather than giving more power to the darkness and the problems and stuff by giving them energy, it's more about bringing the light and the positivity. I like that. And listen, what you say there about though people being able to have that conversation with someone like you in a way they might not be able to do it at home. So you make the point, don't you, that like there will be conflict in relationships and that's not a bad thing in itself. But the problem a lot of the time then is how we communicate with each other around the conflict, isn't it?
Absolutely. And kind of the research would show that the how we handle conflict is the most predictive factor of the success or viability of a relationship. And in particular, it's about how we handle criticism. So the burning point of most difficulties in relationships is the inability of people to be able to absorb the criticism of their partners. It's kind of like an existential threat in some ways when somebody is criticizing the way you view things, questioning the way you view of a relationship or questioning other things in the relationship. People can react in very defensive ways. So a lot of the work I do with people is working particularly with men who tend to get angry or get defensive when they're being criticized by their partner, or else begin to shut down or withdraw or disengage. So helping men to metabolize criticism and not get defensive and not feel offended by that is crucial to be able to make a bridge to change.
Okay, so how do we give criticism in a healthy way, and how do we receive criticism or hear it in a healthy way?
Yeah, there's the two sides of it. Giving criticism is kind of turning a complaint into a request. So it's easy to kind of point out the negatives or to criticize somebody for what they're doing or not doing. It's much harder to turn that criticism into a request for a particular behavior or a particular behavior change. The other thing then is being able to feel criticism. And as I say, that's the more difficult thing. And I say to a lot of men and to women that you really need to allow your partner the entitlement to criticize you a couple of times a week at least. I say to men, you should give your wife or your spouse or your partner 3 free coupons to criticize you in terms of your behavior and what you're doing.
Okay.
And the research kind of shows that people's difficulties in accepting that kind of criticism or accepting the influence of their partner is what creates the difficulty. So it's kind of learning to metabolize that and to be much softer with it and to receive a criticism, not react to it, and then allow yourself to absorb it and then come back to it a bit later. But the defensiveness and the anger that can sometimes get erupted by criticism really becomes the problem. And a lot of the time then I'm working with anger. And what I've certainly realized over the years is that anger more or less is a relatively useless emotion in family life and in couples' relationships. While it can discharge tension and distress and anxiety and can get defensive, it isn't productive. So very often I have to talk with people like, is your anger getting what you want or what you need? But equally then looking at the other side is looking at the criticiser. And again, if you criticise somebody and point out their flaws, it's very rare that somebody thanks you for that. So if
okay,
I
so don't personalise it and make it about you are such a thing. You're saying to the person, I'd prefer if you would do X this way, is it?
Well, exactly. It's as I say, turning it into a request. So instead of attacking the character or personality of your partner, it's saying, what I would like would be, or what I would want is, or what I need is. But it's very hard to get away from it. Criticism is inevitable in relationships, but being able to metabolize it is what enables relationships to function. And you do find that mature people and the more highly functioning people in relationships are able to feel criticism without getting defensive, are able to be empathic and see things from the other person's perspective, and certainly don't react with anger or don't get offended, but yeah, take it seriously and are able to come from that point of view.
In terms of the anger, I presume it's as simple as sometimes as take a pause and walk away for a minute, is it? Or just leave something and as you said, with the criticism, come back to it later, maybe when you're calmer.
Yeah, that can be kind of a tool or a technique, but more often than not, it's a pattern of behaviour. So people who get angry, whether they're men or women, tend to do that as a part of a pattern of responding to criticism or negativity. And part of helping people is helping them to understand where that comes from. And that usually connects in with people's own upbringing, their own family of origin, what they've experienced as children in their own homes. And understanding that piece of it, it can be a real release for couples. So I often say to people, like, we're fragments of families. And yeah, because we're fragments of families, we bring our own wounds, we bring our own hurts. And everybody has their own emotional disabilities as a consequence of what they've experienced or not experienced in their own families growing up. And understanding those vulnerabilities and those emotional disabilities can be the gateway into helping each partner understand the other, not just as reacting to them, but reacting from the experiences they would have grown up with in their own family. And that can become a release or a better or a higher level of understanding as to what's happening in the relationship.
Oh, okay.
And
yeah,
as I say,
yeah,
I do that work with couples. And if people are interested in that, they can go onto my website and we do courses, okay, for couples over 5 or 10 sessions to help them to learn these kinds of ways.
Okay,
of,
but it's being aware of the patterns that were imprinted on you when you were growing up, if you will. And I suppose being aware of something is the beginning of being set free. There's one thing before you go, Colin, that I did want to get to, which was that you say that that people become, even if it's not a good relationship, people become very attached, and also that people who feel rejected within their relationship, that is an incredibly painful thing. Can you explain that?
Well, yeah, the work that's done on attachment theory and the power of our attachment to people, the pain centres in the brain that get lit up when we're rejected are the same, they're the equivalent of physical pain. So being rejected by your partner can feel almost like you're standing on a nail. So our sensitivity to rejection and hurt in relationships are profoundly painful. And because this is connected also to our past and our history, what's evoked in intimate relationships is so powerful because of that. And like the understanding our primary attachments and the environments in which we grew up are so important to helping us understand who we are in the present with our partners and what's activated for us in that relationship.
Okay.
And that really is profound. And the studies of watching infants with their parents is significant in terms of revealing the power of that kind of rejection or abandonment. And there's wonderful stuff done by John Bowlby and his associates in the 50s and 60s about how powerful that is and how then it casts a shadow over adult relationships, and as we're going back to the previous point,
yeah,
can then be the gateway of understanding why we react with such intensity and with such pain.
Okay. I call him not to be glib about it, like, but listen to all that and you realise that we have to kind of try and go a bit easier on each other, don't we? Because we're delicate in these situations. That's That's what I take from it all. Like, we can be very harsh and unthinking with each other at times in relationships, can't we?
Absolutely. Yeah. Like, we carry a lot of anger and anxiety, but when you get underneath that, you get at the much, much softer, tender emotions that people have. And in the work I do, then it just sinks into a sorrow, it sinks into tenderness, and it sinks into the need that people have that somebody would literally hold their hand and walk them through whatever pain or whatever discomfort they're going through. And I find when I sit down with people and they're fighting with each other, I very often get them to turn toward each other and just hold their hands and continue their conversation. And what happens is all anger just kind of dissipates. And when you look somebody in the eye and you touch their hands as you speak, then you move into the tenderness, into the sorrow, into the loss, into the heartfelt emotions that have brought people together in the first place and can be reconnected with when you get past that kind of anger. But as you say, we're going through things in life now where we need to be soft and tender with one another because that's what we need.
Okay. God, that's so powerful, Colm, that notion of the holding hands and people seeing each other again, seeing each other properly again. All right, relationship therapist Dr. Colm O'Connor, thank you very much as always, Colm.